is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We're hearing explosions here and there. Seeing undetonated missiles, seeing buildings collapse from missiles that are detonated few meters in front of us.
That is Joseph Chikwado, a Nigerian student who has arrived home from Ukraine on the dangerous conditions he encountered while leaving the country. Details coming up. Also, Tanzanian prosecutors have dropped terrorism charges against opposition leader Freeman Mbowe. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Nigeria says it has evacuated more than 1,000 of its citizens from Ukraine since Russia's invasion, chartering two privately owned Nigerian airlines to fly them home from Poland, Hungary, and Romania. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
The Nigerian government says more than 1,000 of its citizens have been brought home as of yesterday. Abdulrahman Balogun is the head of media, public relations and protocol of the Nigeria Diaspora Commission.
The Nigerian government have done four flights from Poland, from Romania, from Hungary, I think two flights from Hungary. Thus far, we've had over 1,062 from all the evacuation from Ukraine.
Balogun, speaking by phone, says the total is expected to reach about 2,000. He says more trips will be made by the airlines to ferry the citizens home. Balogun says the government has received reports of racism against Nigerians trying to flee Ukraine to Poland.
Indeed, there are reports of discrimination and racism. So we hope by now our Minister of Foreign Affairs and other agencies that are already on top of it, discussing with relevant authorities in Russia, Ukraine, and Poland, and some other other countries to desist from this unpopular act of racism.
A Nigerian student who has arrived home, Joseph Chikwado, says Polish authorities did not deny entry to foreign students, though Ukrainian security agencies gave priority to their citizens at the border. Chikwado spoke via WhatsApp. He speaks on the situation in Ukraine before his departure.
There's a situation in Ukraine as of, let's say, 5 days ago. It was very dire. It was very tiresome and really dangerous because we were literally running for our lives. We're hearing explosions here and there, seeing undetonated missiles, seeing buildings collapse from missiles that are detonated few meters in front of us. So it's crazy. I experienced this myself. There was an undetonated missile in front of me and one about, I don't know, maybe a kilometer away, if I can see that far back. I cannot tell you the exact length it was or the exact distance it was. So I was speaking from a few days back, and things like this are still going on in a city called Sumy, where students are trapped. The train stations and roads have been bombed, so you cannot go or leave the city.
Balogun commended President Muhammadu Buhari for approving funds for the evacuations. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
Nigeria has agreed to supply natural gas to Equatorial Guinea at Nigeria's International Energy Summit in Abuja. African energy experts are urging quick implementation of the gas deal amid high demand and supply disruptions caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
This week's signing of a gas deal by Nigeria's Minister of State for Petroleum, Timipur Silva, and his Guinean counterpart, Gabriel Lima, is a testament to Africa's untapped gas market. The deal seeks to supply Nigerian gas to Guinea's processing site in Punta Europa. Silva said the deal will allow much of Nigeria's unused gas to access the global market within 2 years, a timely development, say experts. Gbenga Komolafe is head of Nigeria's Upstream Petroleum Regulatory Commission.
The supply disruptions caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine resulted in upward swing of crude oil prices surpassing $100 per barrel for the first time since 2014. This development offers market potential for Nigeria to key into optimizing its oil and gas assets.
African energy experts at the signing urged officials of both countries to expedite the implementation of the deal. Komolafe said African countries need to carry out increased exploration and adopt advanced technology to maximize production yields to increase oil and gas reserves. Nigeria ranks among 9 countries with the highest gas reserves in the world. In January, Nigeria's gas reserves rose by 1.4% from the previous year, but the market remains largely untapped, and previous attempts by authorities to initiate gas deals fell apart. Nigerian authorities last week said they were willing to invest more and focus on natural gas exploration. Simbi Wabote is executive secretary at the Nigerian Content Development and Monitoring Board.
It is time for us to synergize as Africa in order to expand that opportunity beyond the shores of Nigeria.
But officials say a lack of prior investments in the energy sector could limit this opportunity for African countries. Mele Kiari is the managing director of the Nigerian National Petroleum Commission.
There's a clear demand and supply gap that we are seeing today. And that's why we are seeing the $104 oil in the market today. No one has invested significantly in the last 10 years, and more so in the last 5 years, to an extent that we are seeing the effects of what that really means.
For now, officials and experts will be anxious to see how this gas deal changes the status quo. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
South Africa, a democracy established on a strong human rights basis after decades of apartheid, continues to be criticized around the world for not condemning Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The government has strong ties to Moscow, with many senior members getting military training in the former Soviet Union in the 70s and 80s. But analysts say there are other reasons that Pretoria and other African countries are reluctant to speak out more strongly against the tragedy unfolding in Eastern Europe. Darren Taylor has more.
The African National Congress government's failure to criticize human rights violations committed by ideological and economic allies Russia and China dates back to when Nelson Mandela ceded the presidency to Thabo Mbeki in 1999. One example is the ANC's consistent refusal since then to grant Tibetan spiritual leader the Dalai Lama a visa to visit South Africa. Party hierarchy didn't want to upset China, another strong ally in the 5-member BRICS economic bloc. Yet in 1996, Mandela, often called by his Xhosa clan name Madiba, welcomed the Dalai Lama. Mandela ignored Beijing's threats that the visa would insult it by recognizing the legitimacy of Tibet's claim to independence. Selo Hatang is CEO of the foundation set up in Mandela's name.
We have asked our government that it be seen to use its influence as a member of BRICS to call on Russia to stop the guns so that we can then begin the process of rebuilding and negotiations.
But the administration of Cyril Ramaphosa says it'll do no such thing. Hatang's convinced that some African governments are hesitant to side with the West because of its role in previous conflicts.
Remember when Madiba angrily reacted to the attack of Iraq by the US and the UK government, joined by other allies? At the time, those Western forces were saying to everybody, you are either with us or you are against us. And they bullied everybody to then be with them. And those who disagreed vehemently, like the South African government did, were then isolated and treated like they did something wrong.
He adds that the blatant discrimination against Africans trying to flee from Ukraine is also alienating the continent.
At a time of conflict, you have people who still have the time to hate, to show their hatred of black people. Black people who are being pushed out of trains, who are being pushed out of public transport like buses, and then when they make it to the border, they are not allowed in, as if they are naturally built not to be killed by those guns. You can't be asking for solidarity from the rest of the world, including Africa, but you treat African children the way you've been treating them.
Hatang says South Africa joining a chorus of condemnation would serve little purpose.
Condemnation, we need to go beyond condemnation. We know that a wrong has been committed, but now what next? We need to then be showing leadership, because Madiba back then said there's a failure of leadership. And at a critical moment like this, we are about to see failure of leadership again. It's time for us to then urge the South African government to also speak to the partners in the Russian government to say, let's negotiate.
He says the Nelson Mandela Foundation is unequivocal in its condemnation of Russia's reason for the invasion, namely that Ukraine's alliances with the West are a threat to Moscow.
Is there a point where a country is justified to attack another? And the answer to that is no. Is there a point where your security, your interest as a nation becomes so threatened that you then do what you need to do? And I think there's no justification for war at all.
Hatang says even if the war ends today, the foundation would be very concerned about the militarization of Ukrainian civilians, many who are now armed to fight the Russians. As South Africa well knows, he says, a weaponized society never ends well. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A report submitted to the UN Human Rights Council Friday finds a lack of progress in the human rights situation in Eritrea. Investigators say that dissenting voices are being violently and systematically crushed by the government. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN Special Rapporteur Mohamed Abdelsalem Babiker says those most at risk include political opponents, activists, journalists, religious leaders, and draft evaders. He says they are subjected to prolonged arbitrary detention in inhuman and degrading conditions, in some instances amounting to torture. Babiker says thousands of Eritreans have been arbitrarily detained and held in prison since 1991, stripped of their legal rights.
Some have died over the years. The whereabouts of others remain unknown. I urge this council to extend the maximum possible pressure on the Eritrean authorities to release all prisoners of conscience. A comprehensive reform of the justice sector is also urgently needed to reestablish the foundation of the rule of law.
The UN investigator says the ongoing conflict in Ethiopia is worsening the already dire situation of forced conscription in Eritrea. He says the government justifies its indefinite extension of the national service as necessary to defend the country against the Tigray People's Liberation Front. The rebel group from Ethiopia's Tigray region, which borders Eritrea, has been at war with the Ethiopian government since November 2020. Babiker says the national service program is akin to forced labor and is one of the key sources of human rights violations in the country.
Conditions for conscripts are extremely harsh, and sexual harassment, severe punishment, and inhuman or degrading treatment are common. The program also has severe impacts on the rights to education and to the decent work of thousands of Eritreans, as well as on their families, who cannot survive on the meager pay received by conscripts.
Babiker says the conditions continue to push thousands of young Eritreans to flee their country every year. He calls on the government to engage in a constructive dialogue to improve human rights in the country. Ambassador Geratu Tesfamikael in Eritrea's Ministry of Foreign Affairs says his country has been the target of politically motivated resolutions and mandates of the UN Human Rights Council for years. He says this latest report presents unsubstantiated allegations of violations and ignores the positive developments made in areas of social justice and human rights. While his government faces human rights challenges, the ambassador says there is no systematic human rights crisis in the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Tanzanian prosecutors have dropped terrorism charges against opposition leader Freeman Mbowe and three others who were released Friday after being held for 8 months. Tanzanian police arrested the four last year in the port city of Mwanza, where Mbowe was to address a meeting to discuss constitutional reforms. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Supporters of Mbowe's Chadema party and others who were following the case cheered and sang solidarity songs outside the High Court's Division of Corruption and Economic Sabotage. Mbowe and his colleagues were set to appear in court Friday after a court decision 2 weeks ago that the four defendants had to face terrorism charges. Peter Kibatala is the head of Mbowe's defense team and was happy to see his client released.
Tuko very proud kwamba hatujawaangusha.
He said, "We are very proud that you have not let them down. I believe even relatives, neighbors and friends of the accused, including Freeman Mbowe, have seen that there's no one we have let down." He added, "We have left our strength and everything at the court." Rights activists welcomed Mbowe's release, but said more needs to be done to address human rights issues in the country, such as laws that allow suspects to be jailed before investigations into the alleged crimes are completed. Anna Henga is the executive director for an NGO, the League on Human Rights Center. She says, "When I was given the reports, I was like, there's no case here, because there was no strong evidence to put him on trial with terrorism charges." U.S. Ambassador to Tanzania, Donald Wright, welcomed the news on Twitter, saying it is a welcome opportunity for Tanzania to turn the page and focus on the future. Political analysts such as Abdulkarim Watiki say the Mbowe's release reflects positively on President Samia Suluhu Hassan's government, but Watiki said it is time for Tanzania to avoid the improper jailing of people for months on end. He said if someone is to be charged, then the government and investigators should be satisfied there's truth in the accusations directed to someone. But he asks, if someone is kept behind bars, how can you revise the image? How are you going to return his rights, which have been denied? Party supporters such as Deogratias Mahinyila say the decision to release Mbowe is the right one, but highlights the injustice Mbowe faced. He says, "We see that this decision has been delayed, but also in a legal sense, it makes us as a nation to see that we need a new constitution." Chadema party officials were not immediately available for comment, but Mbowe did not speak to reporters after his release. Charles Kombe for VOA News in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
The Nigerian government is aiming to eradicate HIV/AIDS from the country by 2030. Part of that effort includes a new trust fund worth 62 billion naira, or about $150 million, to reduce gaps in spending and to provide treatment for more people living with the virus. Reporter Munachi Chokes has more from Abuja.
The HIV Trust Fund of Nigeria was announced following concerns about a sharp rise in new infections countrywide. Speaking during the recent launch in Abuja, President Muhammadu Buhari pledged his administration's commitment to prioritize health interventions to address killer diseases and public health emergencies.
Ending AIDS as a public health threat in Nigeria will require increased domestic funding. We have continued to make good our commitment of placing more people living with HIV on treatment annually using national resources.
President Buhari expressed his commitment towards collaborating with the private sector to end the pandemic by 2030. Bas Mustafa is the secretary to the government of the Federation. In his speech during the launch, he said the country has spent about $6.2 billion on HIV since 2005.
About 80% of these funds were contributed by external donors, mainly the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR, and the Global Fund to fight AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria.
The Director General of National Agency for the Control of AIDS in Nigeria, Dr. Gambo Aliyu, noted that the fight against HIV and AIDS pandemic requires more financial support.
Within the last 3 years, we've identified and placed on treatment additional 900,000 people living with HIV in Nigeria, bringing the total number of HIV-infected Nigerians on treatment to 1.7 million.
Aliyu said the fund would help pay for the mobilization and deployment of domestic private sector resources needed to prevent mother-to-child transmission of the disease. A member of the National Association of Persons Living with HIV and AIDS in Nigeria, Hadiza Ibrahim, shared her success story on the prevention to mother-to-child transmission of HIV.
I found out my status when I went for antenatal care in State Specialist Hospital, Yola. And since then, I have had 5 children, and they are all healthy, they are all well, and they are HIV negative.
The Trust Fund is championed by the National Agency for the Control of AIDS in Nigeria and is driven by the Nigeria Business Coalition Against AIDS. There are about 2 million Nigerians currently living with HIV. For VOA News, Munachi Chuks from Abuja.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America. Basketball Africa League is back. Voice of America joins forces with Africa's Premier Men's Basketball League to bring you the second season of the BAL. It is game on March 5th, 2022. 38 games, 12 teams leaving it all on the court in Senegal, Egypt, and Rwanda to determine the 2022 season champion. Tune in to VOA 24/7 FMs and to our radio and TV affiliates for some action. Pre-game, play-by-play, post-game, daily highlights, delivered by our finest commentators. Basketball Africa League 2022 on Voice of America. May the best team win.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.